Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia 23255. We're winning for now, warning for the future. Thanks for joining us. God bless and good blessing.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be the views of William Kennedy, and we're going to be talking about what's going on as far as this massive media effort to bring in gun control in America and eventually to disarm the American people. And this is just what they did over in Germany. Certainly the socialists got all the guns registered, and then when Hitler came to power in 1933 with the full backing of the American corporations, 100 American corporations, and 10 major banks who financed the Nazi movement and built the war machine for them, then Adolf Hitler, of course, simply took the guns away and laid the foundation for the Holocaust. And ladies and gentlemen, of course, the people don't know what those corporations were. They were General Motors, they were Ford, they were General Electric, they were IBM, AT&T, and now 80 years later, why we see those same corporations operating here in America, and many of the same banks or their subsidiaries operating in America. We're dealing with long-range plans, ladies and gentlemen, to establish a one-world government. That's what it's really all about. That's the basis of America's foreign policy. And that's why they want to, of course, disarm the American people. Because, of course, the American people have understood the subversive element, the small group of subversives who control this country and make mockery out of our Constitution, our voting system. Why those people be arrested, tried for murder, and executed? Because they should be. They've taken us from war to war. They kill people throughout the world. The president has an assassination list. The president has an assassination list, and he kills people, including American citizens, and even the son of an innocent son of an American citizen who may have been a terrorist. I don't know whether he was or not, but the son was 16 years old, looking for his dad, and Barack Hussein Obama, who's so concerned about the little children, had this 16-year-old boy killed by a drone. William, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Stan. I love coming on Radio Liberty. I've been doing this show for 10 years now. That's quite amazing, and it's been very productive, and we've got some useful information out there.
Okay, fine. Well, of course, you are concerned about this effort to take the guns away from the American people, and they're not interested in children. I mean, if Barack Obama was really interested in little children, and I heard him the other day saying, if we could just save the life of one child, why, it would be worth it. We kill 2,000 children every day by abortion. I don't hear Barack Hussein Obama talking about that. We've killed thousands of children over in Syria with American-backed terrorists over there killing the civilians. Over 70,000 civilians have been slaughtered there with American by American-financed terrorists coming from Libya and Tunisia and Egypt and Saudi Arabia. And we're training and financing them. And, of course, in they certainly have to be armed. We're providing the weapons, sophisticated weapons, for these. Why these terrorists over in Syria who are killing over 70,000 civilians, why doesn't Barack Obama ever talk about those little children? Go right ahead, William.
Well, yeah, Dr. Stan, what I'd like people to do is go to williamhkennedy.com, williamhkennedy.com, and concerning this whole gun control debate, what I've done is I've put up some information and clips so people can get the correct information on the nature of gun violence in our country. I have two reports, one by John Strassel and another by Penn and Teller.
Hold that thought, William. We'll be back here in just a moment.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
You may have heard about the 90 essential nutrients or the Mighty 90 needed for good health. But with all the products out there, what exactly are they talking about? The Mighty 90 is 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 60 plant-derived minerals, and 2 essential fatty acids. So, now you know. But with all the products you see and hear advertised, what exactly do you buy to come up with the Mighty 90 and the right ratios to promote good health? Youngevity has made it easy with the Healthy Start Pack, which contains one canister of Beyond Tangy Tangerine Vitamin and Plant-Derived Mineral Complex, one bottle of Bone and Joint Enriching OsteoFX Plus, and one bottle of EFA Plus Essential Fatty Acids, all in the proper ratios to promote good health and vitality. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-dry guy, the best you can buy.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is William Kennedy. We're talking about this effort to disarm the American people. And don't think that Barack Obama is concerned about children. If he was concerned about children, he would not be backing abortion. If he was concerned about children, he would certainly try to stop this war over in Syria and stop the funding of the terrorists who are actually killing the civilians over there. Certainly in Syria today, we probably have between 750,000 and 1 million people who've been forced to their homes in the middle of the winter, living in camps in Jordan and in Lebanon. I mean, how would you like to be forced to leave your home knowing when you went back there probably wouldn't be much of anything left? This is what's going on in Syria today. We're living a wonderful life here. We've got this football game coming up this Sunday, and certainly it's going to be determining who's going to be going to the Super Bowl, and a lot of attention focused on that. They focus our attention on what they want us to think, ladies and gentlemen. They control our reality, and right now they're focusing our attention on the necessity of passing legislation to restrict the right of people to have weapons, whereas what you really need, if you care about our children in schools, you want to have somebody there with a concealed weapon. If there had been one person with a concealed weapon at the Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, why there wouldn't have been anywhere near as many people killed if there had been one person with a concealed weapon at Virginia Tech when the student went in there and killed, I think it was 34 students. And certainly if there had been one person with a concealed weapon at Columbine High in Colorado, why, of course, it wouldn't have had the slaughter. This should be so obvious. But, and of course, Barack Obama understands that. Barack Obama sends his daughters to a private school where there are 11 armed people. Now, why doesn't he simply, to save money, simply declare the school a no-gun area so that nobody can have a gun there? And then, of course, just pull those people out and save that money for the American public. And, of course, that would be ridiculous. I wouldn't expect him to do that. He wants to protect his children. In fact, the NRA, to their credit, ran several television ads across the country pointing out the hypocrisy of Barack Obama, who wants certainly to take the guns away from law-abiding citizens and have gun-free schools, but he sends his daughters to school where there are armed people to defend them. And, of course, the NRA called Barack Obama a hypocrite. Well, the White House was incensed, and they said, you shouldn't be bringing the president's children into this. I mean, certainly, children should be left out. This is a terrible thing to do, and yet, of course, Barack Obama always talks about his children, and or they're doing this and that and the other thing, gets the pictures with them. He uses the children all the time when he wants to push a point. But, of course, when we point out that his children have protection and your children, if they go to a school, don't have protection because of the gun grabbers like Barack Obama, why, of course, then they call them, of course, hypocrites. Whereas, of course, this whole thing is hypocritical. Logic tells you that if a person with a gun can protect, and if you don't have a gun, and you have some of these crazy people who are the byproducts of a decadent society, a godless society, a society that's turned its back on God. Why, unfortunately, we're in a situation where we need the ability of law-abiding citizens to carry a gun to protect their neighbors and to protect children. And if you want to protect children, you be sure there's somebody with a gun in every one of the schools. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, I guess, is William Kennedy, who's a good friend, who's written a number of books. He has written a book, certainly, on Satanism, Satanic Crimes. We actually have that book. We carry it, and we also have a 4-CD set on Satanic Crimes with a couple of interviews with William, who goes into the background of the Satanic Crimes that take place in America. And believe me, behind this whole effort to take the guns away from the people, to disarm the American people, are powerful satanic spiritual forces. Because, of course, once you disarm the people, you lay it open for slaughter, as happened to the Armenians, as happened to the Russians, as happened to the Chinese, as happened to the Tutsi there in Rwanda in 1994, when Bill Clinton, whose wife, incidentally, is the current Secretary of State, but in 1994, Bill Clinton was president, and he publicly said, and I still have the clipping, he said, do not use the term genocide about what's going on in Rwanda, because if you use the term genocide, we'd have to intervene. And he didn't want to intervene. He wanted those Christians slaughtered. The Tutsis were Christians. That's why they slaughtered them. William, go right ahead, and if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Go right ahead, William.
Well, Dr. Stan, the best case scenario to stop one of these school shootings, and this is quite harsh, but the best we can hope to do is have staff of these high schools and grammar schools who are carrying concealed weapons and don't tell any of the kids who has what weapon. Because if you do that, you make that person a target or one of the kids that might go crazy. Now, a best scenario case would be the Pearl High School shooting, which occurred in 1997 in Pearl, Mississippi. Luke Woodham was a 16-year-old boy who was involved in a satanic cult, and the people in his satanic cult decided to kill some people at the high school and then kill some pedestrians in downtown Pearl. Now, two students were killed by Luke Woodham. He got up that morning, stabbed his mother to death, drove to school, killed his ex-girlfriend and another girl, and wounded seven other people with a rifle. Now, what happened then is he ran back to his car with his guns and more ammunition and was about to drive downtown, allegedly to meet the other people in this cult to kill more people. Now, what had happened, one of the principals in the assistant principals at the high school had a pistol in his car. A guy named Joe Myrick, he had a .45 semi-automatic pistol in his car trunk, and he heard the shooting, and luckily his car was positioned in a place where he could retrieve his firearm quickly. He ran up to Luke Woodham while he was in his car ready to go away and pointed the gun at his head and said, "Come out with your hands up or I'll shoot, surrender." And Luke Woodham surrendered. Now, this is the best scenario we can come up with to have an armed person in the school. No one knew this guy had a pistol available, and force the killer to surrender. Ultimately, you want these people to surrender so they get sent to prison, and that will discourage other people. These kids and murderers are generally on suicide missions. And if they see a kid at like Luke Woodham who failed at going on a suicide mission and is now in prison, that will discourage them. Now, as I said, he was on his way to meet some other members of this cult to start shooting pedestrians randomly in Pearl Center. Now, this is a strange case where the other members of his satanic cult who didn't perform any violence that day were actually tried for conspiracy and sent to prison. This is one of the few times that an entire cult was sent to prison for one of these school shootings.
So well, I think it's so strange, William, that most people don't understand. We have all sorts of satanic cults here in America, all throughout the world, but we have so many of them here in America. I mean, that was the reason they took God and prayer and the Ten Commandments and morality out of our schools, was to sort of destroy a belief in God. Why it's not that people believe in nothing, why they believe in anything. And of course, they aggressively undermine the moral standards of this country, the religious beliefs of our people. There are probably about 12 to 14% of the American population today who've turned against God are either atheists or they're frankly certainly agnostics, or they call themselves secular. But many of these people, having turned their back on God, join satanic cults. Satanism is one of the most rapidly growing religions in America today. And if that's true, why don't we hear about it? Why, very simply, because the media is controlled, and there are powerful spiritual forces that control the media. That's the common denominator behind what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness, the 20 or 30 secret organizations and semi-secret organizations that hold regular meetings here, and of course they're all energized by the Prince of Darkness. And until you understand that, until you understand that these people have no use at all, are not concerned about the value of human life, we have to recognize the fact that we need to begin to protect our children. And it's unfortunate, but the reality is we need to have armed people, certainly in every school, to protect the children. We need to have armed people, certainly in the malls. We need to have armed people on our streets. People who are carrying concealed weapons to do why? To protect their neighbors. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And if you don't really believe that there's satanic cults, you need to read William's book, Satanic Crimes, an excellent overview of the satanic crimes both here in the United States and throughout the world, and the fact that you never read about them in the media or very seldom read about them is simply a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think and believe. Go right ahead, William.
Well, Dr. Stan, as I was saying, that's the best we can hope for, like the Pearl School shooting, where an armed vice principal, really a hero, you never hear his name, Joel Myrick, you know, thank God he had a .45 caliber semi-automatic pistol in the trunk of his car, or there'd be a lot more people in Pearl, Mississippi dead. Now, this is what people don't realize. There's really no way you can generate statistics about crimes that are deterred with legal weapons. For example...
Hold that thought. We're going to a break. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Give us a call.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Americans love pills. America's 40 million seniors will have consumed 1.6 trillion pills during their lifetime, not counting vitamin pills. This is health journalist Bill Sardi. Americans are living longer an additional 18 years after they reach age 65. How will senior Americans spend that time? You've got it. Taking more and more pills to treat more and more disease. We need a better approach. How about a pill that promotes health rather than treats disease? That's where a pill I formulated comes in. It's called Longevinix, and it's a well-tested combination of herbs and vitamins proven to trigger genes activated by a limited-calorie diet, even mimicking physical exercise. Longevinix promotes healthy vision, heart pumping, immune response, blood clotting, and even mood. Call 1-866-405-4000 to order today. Healthy aging. Longevinix. Get started before you grow old. Call now. 1-866-405-4000.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Do you enjoy cooking? Would you like to learn the culinary secret that Barbara uses to enhance the flavor of Dr. Stan's food? Who's Barbara? She's Dr. Stan's wife. And what's her secret? She uses the delicious spices produced by Old Westport Spice and Trading Company. After using and enjoying their products for almost 20 years, Dr. Stan and Barbara decided they should offer their favorites to you. If you would like to please your family and enhance the flavor of your food, call 800-544-8927. That's 800-544-8927. I suggest you call today. Once again, the telephone number is 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927.
This is Dr. Stan. We're simply talking about this phony effort, of course, to convince us we've got to have gun registration. We've got to certainly have background checks for guns. Basically, ladies and gentlemen, well, this is simply another means of collecting information on you, federal dossiers. They talk about background checks. Well, who's going to do it? Is it going to be the federal government, or is it certainly going to be the state? They don't tell you any of these things. How long will the background check take? 3 days or 13 months or 30 years? We don't know. Basically, you do not want to have the wicked and evil people. And I will tell you, ladies and gentlemen, our government has been taken over by evil and wicked people. We have two governments. We have a visible government. We have an invisible government. That invisible government certainly controls both political parties. They have put their people, as I've pointed out repeatedly in the past, the members of the Trilateral Commission. There's only 87 of them in the North American chapter. And yet since 1977 to 2008, every president and or vice president of the United States came from the membership roles of that organization. Do you honestly think that was accidental? Barack Obama doesn't belong, but I will tell you that 11 of the original key advisors he had, Secretary of Treasury, a Deputy Secretary of State, four other members of the Secretary of State, certainly the Ambassador of the United Nations, his closest National Security Advisor, they all came from this little group of 87 people. They're the ones who run our country. Why doesn't anybody want to tell you that? Why, very simply, because they're either afraid to, or like Rush Limbaugh, they're very well paid, not to reveal the truth, but to conceal it. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. Under no circumstances should we let them disarm us, because, of course, at that point, there will be no way, of course, there will be any opposition to this satanic group. And if you don't believe they're satanic, go up to the Internet and type in trilateral.org. Trilateral.org, look at their logo. It's a circle made up of three curved arrows. And if you look very closely, you can almost imagine that you see three sixes there. But if you don't see the three sixes, you can't miss the fact that the three arrows are joined together by an upside-down broken cross, an ancient symbol of the ancient mystery religions going back thousands of years. Why did the Trilateral Commission select that logo? Because it is the continuation of these secret societies intent upon world government that have existed for thousands of years. Only today we're seeing the culmination of their efforts. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. Our guest is William Kennedy, and we're talking about this effort to disarm the American people. William, go right ahead.
Well, Dr. Stan, as I was saying, this woman in Georgia who fired five shots into an assailant who had a criminal history of beating and raping women, she saved her two children. And the problem is she did not have a powerful enough pistol to actually put this guy down or kill him. The five shots in him from this low-caliber pistol did not kill this man. And luckily, he chose to flee, but in the time it took him to go down the stairs and get in his car and drive away a couple blocks, even with those five bullets in him, he still probably could have killed that woman and her two children. Low-caliber pistols like 22s and 38s, you know, it's better than no pistol in this woman's case, but if this woman had had a 9mm or a Mac, one bullet either would have killed this man or put him on the ground. You get hit with a 9mm bullet at close range, it will probably most likely kill you. If it not, it will put you on the ground and you're not going to get back up. A low caliber pistol, five slugs did not stop him. And President Obama is talking about banning these semi-automatic pistols and these higher range pistols, or the amount of ammunition you can procure for them. This is insane. This poor woman should have had a more powerful pistol. Just think of the terror. She wasn't sure if that guy was going to come back up the stairs. She didn't know what was going on. Now the taxpayers have to pay for him. He's in a coma and intensive care. He gets Obamacare. One bullet would have probably killed him and would have made the situation easier for everybody involved. Now, this poor woman is traumatized, and the gun lobby are trying to get her to come publicly. You know, the poor woman, she was law-abiding, taking care of her two children, running a home-based business, because we now live in a country where you need two incomes just to survive for basic food and shelter.
Well, I can just tell you it's going to get a lot worse, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to get a lot worse. That telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest, William Kennedy. But if you'd like to give us a call, we'd love to hear what you have to say.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
For many decades, these great United States have had security and plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden. All heirloom and all ready for you to create that special, necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 888-866-9132 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 888-866-9132 right now and order seed for this year's garden. Seedcatalog.com.
So you finally decided to start taking a vitamin supplement. Those chewables and tablets are fine if you don't mind paying for something that is only absorbed about 4-6%. However, a liquid supplement can have a 90% absorption rate if you choose the right one. Longevity offers a wide variety of liquid supplements with a 90% absorption rate or more. Beyond Tangy Tangerine may be the best one ever invented. It starts as a liquid, then is freeze-dried like those instant coffees into a crystal. Then all you have to do is add a couple of scoops to water. No refrigeration, no fuss, no mess. Not only do you get a complete multiple vitamin, Beyond Tangy Tangerine also has minerals, and it tastes fantastic. You'll want to drink it all day long. So the next time you reach for a vitamin supplement, reach for Beyond Tangy Tangerine from Longevity. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
Can't get at them. There have been pets killed in
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William is simply talking about the fact that people certainly should have a weapon in their home. Now, I would simply point out that in California, where I live, it is illegal to have a loaded weapon in your home, unless, of course, it is in a gun box with a lock on it, so that maybe a combination lock that only you know that. And I really believe this is true. I believe certainly there's no sense having a gun in your home unless it's loaded. But you should not have a loaded gun laying around, because you never know who's going to get hold of it. This is why you really need to get a gun box. And certainly we actually carry those. I just mentioned that. You can see them on our website. I think they're called V-Line boxes, but I have several of them. I have several weapons, loaded weapons in my home, but they are in these secure boxes. And ladies and gentlemen, whether you get them through Radio Liberty or someplace else, I think you should get them. Well, right now, let's go to John, who's calling from Spokane. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. But I will tell you that the number of the people that I have interviewed through the years have died very mysterious deaths. A number of the people I've interviewed have died very mysterious deaths. Certainly there was Gary Webb. We interviewed him a number of times. And Gary committed suicide by shooting himself in the head twice because he wanted to make sure he was dead. John from Spokane, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank
Do you have a question or comment for our guest?
I have a comment. You know, so often we are faced with these situations, and I'm a regular listener to Radio Liberty, and all those people who are pretty much know where this is all going and what have you. But today it hit me like an epiphany. It hit me because I'm always looking, what's the solution? What's the solution? When are we? How far are we going to let this thing go before we actually do something about it? It hit me today. If you can imagine, I don't know if this would work, but it seemed like it would work to me, and that is, if every listener, if all the major shows, your Stan and Joyce Riley and Alex Jones and Butch Paw and a number of the other ones, if all their listeners simply called their local sheriff, mayor, reps, whatever, all the way through their state, and they called as reporters representing, for example, the Radio Liberty News magazine, you know, you basically deputize your listeners as reporters for the Radio Liberty News magazine, and we're conducting a survey of public officials, and we want, for the record, to know where you stand on honoring your oath of office. And the person takes it down. If it's a representative, he notes the person's name and the documents, the time, and gets it specific, okay? And then if the person says, well, I can't speak for, then we press them and say, good, go ask them. I'll wait. And then if they say they'll call back, if I don't hear back from you within a given time, I'm going to assume that's a no. And so we you know, it's a tough question. And then
now,
if,
what is the specific question that you're going to have them ask the sheriff?
The first question is, does the sheriff intend to honor his oath of office?
All right, and
are you speaking now?
But I think you have to clarify that. I think you have to clarify that.
No.
That would be to uphold the Constitution and not collect weapons.
No. Yes. I mean, don't clarify it.
You don't want to clarify it. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, don't clarify it. They will glibly say yes. Okay. And then the next question is, therefore, I assume you mean that any attempt to infringe upon the rights granted in our Constitution to limit or restrict the bearing of arms, he is going to do everything in his power to fight that. And then though, you're going to hear the hemming and hawing, and we want to get it for the record, and we press him on that question. Because the way I look at it, Stan, is on all these issues, we should have done this, but it's never been something that has been so salient to the American people as the right to keep and bear arms. This is the one that has been the bugle that is waking everybody up.
I think it's an excellent point, and I certainly, in fact, I'm very seriously thinking, John, of going down to visit my sheriff. I don't even know his name, but I've lived here for 55 years. He's a relatively new sheriff, but I think it would be well worthwhile people talking to him. I'm going to be talking to him about the very real danger of an EMP attack and the fact that we need an armed populace. We're going to have certainly posses made up of responsible citizens, or militia made up of responsible citizens, as the whole system of society may break down. But, John, do you have a parting thought before we let you go? But I certainly think it's well worthwhile, although I would tell him what that oath of office is and ask him if he's going to uphold that. But go ahead.
Well, they should know
parting
the oath.
Thought.
They took the oath. They should know the oath. They took the oath.
But you really have to tell them what it is. And basically, will you uphold your oath to support our Constitution and the Second Amendment? That would be the question. Anyway, Chris, we'll disagree on that, but good idea. Anything you'd like to say before we let you go?
You caught me flat-footed. No, I think that's the main thing. I think that what you said about going down there, for the people who have the time to do that, that would obviously be the best.
What you really need to do, John, is get a group of people together. You need there in Spokane a small group of people, maybe 10, 20, and then, of course, delegate various responsibilities. One person to talk to the sheriff, one person to talk to the chief of police, other people to try to get people thinking about what's going on, and then half a dozen of them to get people to listen to Radio Liberty, okay?
Okay, but the only thing I look at that, and I look at the amount of organization that is required out the gate. And this is where a lot of times the solutions start to fizzle. Whereas if there are solutions that people can immediately do without having to do anything, they can immediately do. They can make a phone call. They can ask these questions. And this information can be combined. And the person can be put on the record. What it does is it forces the issue.
Okay, God, John, God bless you. Thanks very much. I appreciate your concern. Certainly, William, how would you respond to John's remarks?
Well, I think that's a very important thing, and for no other reason, to remind our law enforcement that they did take an oath to uphold the Constitution, and the Constitution clearly and distinctly states that private citizens are allowed to be armed, and it is implied that they are allowed to be armed with the most sophisticated and powerful fire weapons available on the market. Now, the term militia you see in the Constitution, that actually referred to private citizens owning weapons. Militias, like in Massachusetts, the Minutemen were called Minutemen because they could be ready in a minute's notice. They had their rifles right by their beds, which were the most high-tech assault rifles of the day. Now, if they had their rifles in an armory and had to go somewhere and collect them, they wouldn't have been called Minutemen. They would have been called, like, two-hour men, I guess, or something ridiculous. But the term militia referred to private citizens owning high-tech weapons in their homes, and if necessary, organizing themselves into groups. Now, one thing that's interesting, during the American Revolution, the British Army did not recognize what they called militia as normal armies, and they believed that they were not obliged to treat them with the terms of war, which were very much more humane back then than they do now. And people should rent the Mel Gibson movie called The Patriot. And it's very accurate, and it shows that some British troops who capture American revolutionaries, and they're wounded, and they have them in British custody, and the captain of the British Guard says, shoot them, they're only militia. In other words, they were not obliged to follow the protocols of war and kill these people. So these people that argue that in the Constitution the term militia meant the armed services, that is a grave misconception. Militia meant private citizens owning firearms who, if necessary, could organize themselves into militia, as did the colonists at Lexington and Concord.
And basically, of course, in Israel today, why every citizen, every male, I think probably from 18 to 55, has to have a gun. He is part of the army, part of the defense force, and he has that gun. He keeps it at home to defend the country. They have the same situation in Sweden, pardon me, in Switzerland, and we should have the same situation in America. And one of the things that is never brought up here in America, one reason why every American should have a right to a military-type weapon is very, very simple, and that is if America certainly was ever invaded, why we would certainly need the people to protect this country. And people say, oh, well, we've got the military. Ladies and gentlemen, our military is very, very weak. Certainly, we may have the most sophisticated weapons in the world. But, of course, here in the United States, if we were to have an EMP attack, the military is almost entirely dependent upon the availability of domestic electricity, and the whole thing would collapse. And if you have not read Michael Maloff's book, and we carry it. It's called the A Nation Forsaken, Michael Maloff, 30 years in the Defense Department, much of that spent as a senior policy advisor to the Assistant Secretary of Defense. Read his book entitled A Nation Forsaken, and he will tell you that the American military depends upon our electric system, and if we had an EMP attack, they'd have no means of communication. We need every man to have a weapon to protect America. That's what it's all about. And that's Michael Maloof, M-A-L-O-O-F. Okay, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you have a question or comment, let's go to Michael calling us from Flint. Hi, Michael. Do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yeah, I was just wondering, you know, I read the Bible a lot, and it talks about the Spirit of God, you know, and, you know, if you have the Spirit of God, then you have, you can be delivered from the bondage of corruption and into the glorious liberty of the children of God with the Spirit of God. So with us not really treating God the way we should and ignoring God and Jesus and doing whatever we want here, we're basically at some point really going to need these guns because we're not doing the right thing. And when you're not doing the right thing, you're going to get attacked.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think when a nation turns against God, God no longer protects that nation. Now, what we need is a great revival in America, and I believe in that. But certainly going right along with that, I think we have to be prepared to defend ourselves and our families, and that we have to look to God for protection. Michael, God bless you. Anything else you want to say? Because we've got a couple of other callers. Again, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But if anybody doesn't think that God is going to bring his judgment on this country, they've never read the Bible and see what happened to the children of Israel over and over again when they turned against God as we are today. Go ahead, Michael.
Okay. So what can we do, the problem isn't the guns and these magazines and the bullets and all that, there's got to be some way that they can put something on them guns or whatever to where that it can't be taken into a school. They'll know it immediately or something like that.
Michael, what you do is you have people in that school who have the right to keep a concealed weapon so that nobody knows who they are, and God bless them. But the most important thing we can have is a close relationship with Jesus Christ, and that's the only thing that's going to get most of us through this, what lies ahead. How would you respond to what Michael was saying?
Well, I want to point out, this is a little-known fact of World War II. Stalin's strategy for beating the Nazis is he simply did two things. He knew that this would beat them. Number one, he reopened all of the Christian churches of all denominations in Russia. And number two, he armed the general population. Now, there's a great film called Enemy at the Gates with Jude Law and Ed Harris about the defense of Stalingrad during World War II. Literally everyone in the city of Stalingrad had a pistol or a rifle, and they simply kept picking off the German soldiers, the Waffen-SS, as they saw them. Now, the Waffen-SS, with all of their high-tech weapons and high training, could not take Stalingrad during the war. And what Stalin did before the war is he trained every 12-year-old with rifles and pistols to be marksmen, and then he simply did not give these weapons out to the people so they wouldn't rebel against him. Now, the second he was threatened, he rearmed these people who were already trained with firearms, reopened all the churches because he knew that the Christians in the area would do a much better job at fighting than communists who don't believe in an afterlife. But that's how Hitler drove the Germans out. It was not through loyalty to communism or the Soviet Union. It was the reintroduction of Christianity and the rearming of the general population that the Russians ultimately beat the Germans more so than England and the United States.
One more caller there. Good point, though, William. But let's go right ahead now to Andrew calling from Tri-Cities. Andrew, do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I just had a comment. I hear all these conversations going on, you know, about the weapons. And the one comment I have is that, you know, the reason, one of the main reasons why we have the Second Amendment is so that if, for whatever reason, the government becomes too oppressive, we're supposed to have the ability to fight back and to stop that. And so, and you never hear anybody say that, and it sounds, you know, a little bit like you're getting into, you know, this realm of being crazy and whatever. But, I mean, that's one of the main purposes, is actually to use those weapons to take back the government for ourselves.
And I think you're absolutely right. And I think that the one reason, of course, that the Senate and the Congress certainly will not pass severe gun registration or gun confiscation laws is because they know the people are going to rise up. And we have certainly hundreds of millions of weapons here in America. I mean, I've heard all sorts of different figures. I've heard the figure 600 million weapons in America. I can believe that. And I will tell you, the people in Washington, D.C. are frightened to death of the people. And especially if the people ever realize the amount of subversion and treason in Washington, D.C., then we have the finest congressmen and senators money could buy. Barack Hussein Obama, who's never had a full-time paying job of any consequence, has recently bought a $35 million estate in Hawaii. You look it up. You can find it on the Internet. Where do you think he got the money for a $35 million estate, Andrew? Obama have gotten enough money to buy a $35 million estate? Basically, he is the finest president money could buy. And this is what it's all about. A parting thought from before we let you go.
No, that's pretty much all I had to say.
Thank you.
Sounds like you have a good show. Thanks.
Well, I hope we do. Hang on there. We'll be back in just a moment with our special guest, William H. Kennedy.
You already know that calcium is important, but did you know that calcium cannot be absorbed without magnesium? That's a fact, and the calcium that isn't absorbed calcifies your soft muscle tissues. Haven't you ever wondered what's really causing all your muscle aches? I'm Pat Sullivan, the founder of Jigsaw Health. I created Jigsaw Magnesium with SRT to solve my own magnesium deficiency problems. You see, magnesium helps people feel younger because magnesium keeps the soft tissues from calcifying. This helps you sleep better at night and feel more energized during the day. Call 888-352-5050 and we'll explain why Jigsaw Magnesium with sustained release technology is so much better than any drugstore magnesium supplement. Mention this radio ad and receive $5 off your order. 888-352-5050, jigsawmagnesium.com.
What has happened to the judicial system in these United States? From the Supreme Court to the smallest county seat, we've seen the judiciary make decisions which are more legislative than interpretive. The judicial system was designed to ensure that the laws of the land were just and constrained by our Constitution. Now judges have immunity and cannot be prosecuted when they act outside the law. This must stop. The judicial branch needs reform. We must pass laws which bring a renewed sense of justice to our nation's court system. I urge you to go to judicialreformnow.com. That's judicialreformnow.com. At that website, you can find out what's really going on in this area of lawlessness, and more importantly, you can find out what you can do to stem the tide of judicial malpractice. JudicialReformNow.com. JudicialReformNow.com.
Most men, when they reach 60 years of age, have urinary tract problems. They have to urinate frequently during the day, and they have to get up several times every night. What's the solution? Many men use a herbal product called Prostate Support. It contains saw palmetto and stinging thistle. It's available from Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan takes Prostate Support and recommends it. And thousands of men take Prostate Support every day because it relieves their urinary tract symptoms. If you would like to try prostate support, call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Once again, the telephone number for prostate support is 800-544-8927. And I suggest you call today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening has been William H. Kennedy. We carry his book, The Satanic Crimes. Of course, we have a four-tape set called Satanic Crimes, four CD set, I believe it is, CD or tape. And basically, of course, two of the interviews are with William Kennedy. Before we go on, though, William, I want you to tell our listeners one more time what your website is so they can get to it.
Quite simply, WilliamHKennedy.com, WilliamHKennedy.com.
Okay, we're going
to go to Google and just type in William H. Kennedy. It will bring you right there. I don't know of another webpage with as many free multimedia offerings than I have. I have literally thousands of free documentary films on a lot of the subjects we're talking about. I have a
William, we're out of time, but it's a great website, ladies and gentlemen. Be sure to go there. William, bless you. We'll talk to you real soon.
Very good. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you. Okay, William is certainly one of my favorite guests. He's so enthusiastic, and he does have a great set, a great site, WilliamHKennedy.com, WilliamHKennedy.com. Well, this is the time. I just mentioned we do carry his books on satanic crimes. We do carry a four CD set or four-tape set. Called Satanic Crimes, and two of those interviews are with William. We also have a four-tape set or CD set on the supernatural. We have all sorts of books going into the background of what's going on, but certainly tying all of this together and taking it from the spiritual into the political is my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. If you haven't read it, shame on you. You need to get the book. You need to read it because it has influenced a lot of people's thought, and it has influenced a lot of people's spiritual lives. Furthermore, certainly we hope that you will want to help us get that book and reprint it. We've already got between 50 and 100,000 copies out. We're going to do one last printing. As you know, I'll be 84 this coming next month. And so basically, this will probably be the last printing that I will do. But if you'd like to get to help us, you can get a case of the books, and each book will be less than $2.40 each. It'll cost you $150 for 64 copies of the book. Sydney, if you actually get the book, I will send you either a free DVD we've made or a free four CD set or tape set we've made. And basically, you can use that to help defray the cost of shipping. But give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We're about over a quarter of the way to completion of our effort to get the book reprinted. So if you'd like to get it, give us a call, and we will not bill you until we're ready to start printing. That'll probably be a month or so, something like that. Under any circumstances, our number is 1-800-544-8927. We're going to, of course, not be able to take any more calls here, but if you'd like to reach us, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And certainly then you can go there. You can listen to our radio programs, and you can listen 24 hours a day because we have a satellite hookup. And you can listen to the archive programs. You can listen to the live programs. And you can also get Joyce Riley and Butch Paw there at our satellite. Joyce and I and Butch and Pastor Chuck Chrismeyer share that satellite, and some people just get a satellite receiver, a KU receiver. They're not that expensive, and basically they listen 24 hours a day. Listen all the well. I suppose they have to have some time for sleeping, but you can listen for 24 hours a day to that satellite. Then, of course, we hope many of you will want to get the information on what's really going on. I have a talk. It's called Agenda 21, the covert plan. It'll take you into population control. It'll take you into certainly their effort to undermine the fabric of our society, basically to destroy the infrastructure of our society and establish this one world government. They know exactly what they're doing, Very few people understand that we have a one-party system, both parties controlled by exactly the same people, and they have the people in the military and banking and corporations and our educational system and our churches, but they control the media, and they largely control what the American people think. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, of course, if you're out across America, you can certainly give us a call. But right now, we ask you to hold your calls because we're having with us William Grigg. And William certainly is one of my favorite guests. He's here every Friday at this time. William was formerly the editor of the senior editor of the New American Magazine. And then, of course, he, for a time, was the senior editor of the Republic Magazine. And now, of course, he writes prolifically. You can read his articles at lewrockwell.com and certainly up on the Internet. You can go to William's website and pull his articles down. And they're well worthwhile reading. And then, of course, he does write the monthly newsletter for Radio Liberty. It's simply, you get to a point in time where you just don't have time to do everything you want to. And it was taking me so long to write the newsletters that I wasn't getting anything else done. So we got William to write them. And I will tell you, the latest newsletter is outstanding. It certainly goes into this effort to take away our gun rights. And we do hope, of course, many of you out there, if you would like to certainly get a free copy of our newsletter, you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Of course, you can go to our website, RadioLiberty.com, and the newsletters are usually printed, republished there. They're supposed to be put up there right away. Sometimes my secretary is a little negligent doing that, but certainly you can read William's older newsletters at RadioLiberty.com. Just scroll down where it says certainly the letters, and then just go to the letters section. But if you'd like, of course, to get them as soon as they're published, why, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get a catalog, if you'd like to get a free newsletter, we'd be glad to send it to you. Of course, we really hope you're going to want to subscribe to the newsletter or join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. But without further ado, oh, Mr. William Grigg. Hi, William. How are we doing?
Dr. Stan, I'm doing well, and it's always a pleasure and a blessing to be with you.
Well, it's always a blessing to have you. What are we going to be talking about tonight?
We have to continue our discussion of the efforts to disarm the American public and some of the pushback that's occurring, and it's a wonderful thing to see it, on the part of some state legislators and some county sheriffs. But we have to recognize the larger strategic picture here and some of the tactical liabilities that we confront in dealing with the undisguised efforts on the part of the federal government to disarm the public to the extent that's possible. A few days ago in the state of New York, the legislature, acting with the type of panicky indifference to propriety and logic that characterizes political bodies in times of crisis, enacted a comprehensive gun law that's the most restrictive, one of the most restrictive in the country. I don't know if it's quite as restrictive as the one in Illinois. And then they found that they had to backtrack because in their indecent eagerness and adolescent zeal to make a statement about the supposed necessity of disarming the law-abiding public, they forgot to exempt law enforcement officers from the new restrictions on the ownership of high-capacity ammo magazines. And so there's probably going to be a special session or some kind of supplemental legislative act that would go back and retrofit into the law an exemption for law enforcement. But that's the sort of thing that happens when you're caught up in the grand rush for symbolic measures that will have no impact on enhancing public safety, but will infringe upon the rights of the law-abiding.
And I think that's really what's so important. Ladies and gentlemen, this is just all smoke and mirrors. It sort of make you feel good. Oh, we're so concerned about the children. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're concerned about the children, why, you'd have somebody in those schools, every school in America, you'd have somebody there with a concealed weapon, or maybe several people. Nobody should know who is armed, but there should be somebody there, administrators or teachers. Basically, if there had been somebody armed at the Sandy Hook Elementary School, there would not be 20 dead children, and they know that. They just don't want you to know that. William, you go right ahead.
With respect to the Sandy Hook Elementary School massacre, Dr. Stan, I don't know if you've noticed or have mentioned, I would assume that you have, that there was a story in the local Sandy Hook newspaper, I believe it's the Weekly, I can't remember for sure, that described how the local police union was looking for some kind of special arrangement concerning trauma leave or supplemental pay for trauma on the part of the police officers who responded after that horrific massacre took place. But buried at the, literally at the bottom of this article, the very last paragraph, I believe the last sentence of that article, is a reference to the individual who was detained by police in the woods outside the elementary school on the day of the shooting. There's been very little attention paid to the fact that there was this individual, but this man was identified as a tactical officer, an off-duty tactical officer from another police department, but they've never said who it was or what he was doing and why he was carrying a weapon. And if he'd been part of the tactical response, it stands to reason that they wouldn't have detained him, but rather they would have identified him and he would have been involved in either securing the building inside or securing the perimeter outside. But he was simply lurking in the woods outside the school when the shooting was going on. And I find that a very provocative and enigmatic note, sort of an unfinished bit of business, a loose end that needs to be tied up somewhere. I don't know if you've seen that story, but that's just one of the many anomalous things about that incident. But on the question of the action being in the reaction here, the fact that the government is capitalizing on what happened, in New York State, Governor Cuomo said very candidly that confiscation is an option. And then the state legislature enacted with undue haste and too little deliberation. I mean, literally, there was no deliberation at all. The legislators who voted on that package late at night weren't able to read the legislation before enacting it, which is an act of civic irresponsibility that I think would be malpractice if it were committed, the equivalent were committed by a doctor. But that measure was intended to provide, at least in concept and in principle, momentum toward outright confiscation of firearms from the law-abiding, at least what's called semi-autos, and semi-autos would encompass most of the firearms that are legally owned. There was a mayor of a small town in New York. I don't remember the name of the mayor or the name of the town right now, but he was interviewed by an ABC affiliate after that measure was passed, and he said that there's a very high likelihood that we're going to see some really ugly things happen as a result of turning law-abiding people into supposed criminals overnight by a legislative edict. And he said that it's possible that in some of the rural areas of New York...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William is simply talking about the fact that the drastic legislation they have passed in New York City will take many law-abiding citizens who have guns legally and make them into criminals, and this is certainly not going to solve any problem at all. It is part of this effort to disarm the American people. Actually, of course, when President Barack Obama, went before the American people and said, we know that gun legislation is not going to solve the problems, but if we could just help to save the life of one child, shouldn't we try to do that? If we could save the life of just one child, ladies and gentlemen, if you wanted to save the lives of a child, it would be sure that there are people in all of the schools across America who are armed to protect the children. Certainly he has, and to the credit of the National Rifle Association, they put out several ads, television ads across America, pointing out that Barack Obama's children go to schools where there are 11 armed guards. There are 11 armed guards in the school where Barack Obama's children go to school, but he doesn't want you to have anybody armed at the school where your children go, and that is the height of hypocrisy. So basically, of course, if you go right ahead, William.
What was interesting, of course, is that those advertisements put up by the National Rifle Association were immediately attacked in pretty much a full spectrum fashion by the establishment media, who accused the NRA of going after President Obama's children. And of course, this is something that the people responsible for that charge knew was patently false. There is nothing about any of those advertisements that was a criticism of the children. These were criticisms directed at the policymaker. And so you have this rather unedifying spectacle, first of all, of Mr. Obama taking refuge behind human shields for propaganda purposes of the children at this executive order signing ceremony, and then his courtiers and camp followers of the media trying to provide, once again, a human shield in the form of Mr. Obama's children to insulate him from criticism on the basis of his policy preferences. They were not criticizing the president's children. They were criticizing the president's hypocrisy and the hypocrisy of other people who are part of the elite strata of our society, who pontificate about the supposed need for law-abiding, peaceful people to surrender their means of self-defense and their means of defending their children, while at the same time being surrounded by a flying wedge of grim-faced armed men who speak into who have curly microphone wires or headphone wires coming out of their ears, and who speak into lapel mics, and who were very heavily armed and prepared to use weaponry to defend the people who have retained their services. Whether you're talking about the president, the Secret Service protection, or the private security guards who provide protection at the school where Mr. Obama's children are educated, or whether you're talking about Hollywood celebrities who, generally speaking, have a lot of disposable income to hire people very proficient in the use of high-performance firearms in order to protect them against the undue attention or potential threats to their person. The thing that's happened now is that every element of the prestige press, the major media, is involved in a campaign of ritual demonization of people who support the right to armed self-defense and the psychological disarmament of people who are gullible enough to believe that the media can tell us anything useful. Just before the last break, I was talking about what happened after the passage of this New York law, the so-called SAFE Act, and the mayor in question that I'd referred to was Mayor Dayton King of Gloversville. That's a city, a town most likely, of which I'd never heard before reading the story from a couple of days ago. As New York gun owners digest the new regulations under the New York SAFE Act, the Gloversville mayor says he has his own concerns. This is from a local TV affiliate in New York, upstate New York. Although the law is meant to reduce gun violence, Mayor Dayton King thinks it will have the opposite effect. Most people are law-abiding citizens and may go ahead and sell those or turn those over. He's referring to semi-automatics. But you're going to have a faction of people that are going to take a stand, and I can just predict a Waco-style standoff in some rural area, and it's not going to end well, said Mayor King. Now, that's what happens when you take innocent people who are peaceable and law-abiding and by fiat turn them into criminals overnight by criminalizing something that was entirely harmless the day before. If you live in a country where what is right and what is wrong, what is lawful and what is criminal, can change whimsically in the course of an evening at the direction of people who've not bothered to read the legislation that they just enacted, then you're not living under a regime of law. You're living under a collectivist regime or under the will of a despotic junta or clique or even a dictator. And that's really the tropism that we're seeing right now. There's this unmistakable move on the part of our political system in the direction of outright arbitrary power. And that's one of the reasons, I contend, why it's become such a preemptive priority for the government ruling us. First of all, to acquire And to upgrade, it means of wreaking havoc and violence upon the public, and second of all, to deprive us of the legal standing and the legal right to defend ourselves against criminals, whether public or private. And this is another aspect of what's going on that I find very disagreeable, to the point of being nauseating. You had Mr. Obama surrounding himself by children and speaking these sonorous phrases about how if it will protect a single child, it's worth doing. But this is somebody who is killing children every single week in distant lands, in towns and villages and neighborhoods that are impoverished, in the name of protecting us against a threat which is non-existent and exacerbating the genuine terrorist threat that is the result of America's aggressive violence in countries like Pakistan and Yemen and Somalia and Afghanistan. This is somebody who murdered a 16-year-old American teenager because they didn't like the politics of his father.
Now, I think I should clarify that, William. Basically, of course, the president had ordered the assassination, the murder, certainly, of an American citizen who was accused of being a terrorist. He'd never been indicted. All they had was, of course, the statements that supposedly he was a terrorist or certainly critical of America, and certainly maybe he was a terrorist. But that doesn't give you the right to send a drone over and kill him and the people who are with him. Mm-hmm. But, of course, even less gives you the right to kill his 16-year-old son, an innocent young boy who was over in Yemen looking for his dad, and he was having dinner or lunch or something with a friend, and they sent a drone and they killed him. Now, where does the president get the right to kill a 16-year-old child who is the son of somebody that the president has killed because he was a terrorist? Where do you get the right to kill children? Just because you're the president of the United States. Murder does not have a statute of limitations, ladies and gentlemen. And Barack Obama, and I can say this without hesitation, ordered the murder. And when you order a murder, you become a murderer. They used a drone to kill the 16-year-old boy. And go ahead, William.
It's a matter of command responsibility. That's a principle in Anglo-Saxon law that's been observed since at least the 15th or 16th century in England, and something we've inherited. If you are a political official who has command responsibility over a military body and crimes are committed on your orders, then you bear direct moral responsibility for the acts that are committed by your underlings, just as they retain the moral responsibility and the legal liability for obeying unlawful orders. The Nuremberg principle, which is that you are responsible if you carry out unlawful orders, you have to be considered legally liable for punishment that would be appropriate for your war crimes. The Nuremberg principle works both ways. Unfortunately, this is something that we have to lay at the feet of Mr. Obama's predecessor, George W. Bush, and the minions and satraps who surrounded him. There's been an effort to ensure that only the low-hanging fruit on the tree of command, if you will, are the ones that are plucked and cast into prison. Somewhat awkward metaphor, I grant, but I think it's serviceable. They went after, for instance, with respect to the atrocities committed at Abu Ghraib, they went after the privates, they went after the corporals, they went after a few of the sergeants. They didn't go after anybody who was an officer. They didn't go after the colonels. They certainly didn't go after the generals. They didn't go after the policymakers who ordained and enabled the abuses that were committed at Abu Ghraib. Same thing happened with respect to torture. There were a few people who were confronted with prosecution, and Mr. Obama pardoned them in 2009 by a decree that was intended to have us look forward. We're looking forward now, not looking back.
And I think we have to understand, ladies and gentlemen, they tortured people to death. There were at least three people they tortured to death. Major General Taguba, who was the highest-ranking Philippine officer in the American military, he was ordered to investigate Abu Ghraib, what happened there, the torture, the other terrible things that happened. And he was told, before he undertook this, that if he told the truth, it would end his military career. Well, to his credit, and to the discredit of most of the military officers today, Major General Taguba told the truth. And if you've never seen his report, we actually offer it. You can get it on the internet, but we actually offer a nicely bound copy of his report on what happened at Abu Ghraib. You can get that by calling our 800 number, 544-8927. But after completing the report that pointed out the torture and the inhumane policies of the American military, killing and torturing people, why Major General Tacuba was called by the assistant commander of the American military and told to resign his commission. He submitted his resignation. But he was a man of integrity. Why don't the rest of the people simply resign? And the trouble is, they don't have the integrity that Major General Tacuba did. Go right ahead.
Yeah, there are a handful of people in the military. For instance, I believe every JAG officer in every branch of the military protested against the institutionalization of torture and the use of evidence derived from torture in the prosecution of accused terrorists. And I believe just about every JAG officer in the military opposed the 2006 measure that was supposed to repeal habeas corpus. We didn't get around to that until the 2012 and then 2013 NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act. But the Obama administration, following in the footsteps of the Bush administration, has immunized the lawbreakers and then gone after the whistleblowers, people like Tacuba, people like John Kiriakou, the former CIA terrorism case officer, who's now at the end of the month going to prison because he leaked classified information and exposing the crimes committed by the operations directorate in torturing detainees. He's going to prison, but the torturers remain at large.
And ladies and gentlemen, this is not imaginary. This is real. Do you honestly think God is going to bless a country that does this sort of thing? What does this do to the souls of our military? Well, we're going to be back in just a moment with William Grieg, but we're in real trouble as a nation. William, you go right ahead.
It's really important that we dilate upon the iniquity of the government ruling us with respect to torture and summary execution, because this is the government that wants to take our guns away. It stands to reason that a government so depraved as to pursue an institutionalized torture and then punish those who oppose torture is a government that would want to disarm its helpless subjects, to render its subjects helpless in any case, because it seeks to work its evil will upon us without resistance.
Well, you know, William, I really think, of course, that we really have an invisible government. They're the ones who are really running it. It's not the not our duly elected representatives. It's simply that they're bought and paid for. I mean, basically, of course, when you have people like Lyndon Johnson, when he went to Congress, he had to borrow money to get from Texas to Washington, D.C. When he left Washington, D.C., some 30 years later, he was one of the richest men in America. And he never had a job all that time except in Congress. And that's certainly how you get ahead, why you get elected, and then, of course, why you get all sorts of bribes and all sorts of underhanded treatment. And, of course, you get a chance to invest in all sorts of things that are sure things, or as certainly as Hillary Clinton did, why she was allowed to play the commodity market. But, of course, the person she was actually certainly playing against was somebody who wanted a favor from her. She made $100,000 in 2 weeks. And somebody once said, gee, she's so smart. If we just let her run the government, she could pay off our national debt in probably a year or two. I mean, it was simply a payoff. But of course, nobody ever talks about that. It's a criminal act. But Tom Foley did this. So many of the people in Washington, D.C. do this. You know, basically, if you have inside information, you run a hedge fund, you use that inside information and your investments, they can put you in prison for 10 or 20 years. But the congressmen, there's no limitation. They know what's going to happen because they're going to vote on it. They're going to make it happen. And they can go right ahead and use that inside information and make oodles and oodles of money. And nobody ever talks about that. But you go right ahead, William.
It's amazing if you take a look at the demographic contrast between the members of the House of Representatives taken as a body, their income, their assets, their financial profile. The contrast between them and the people they represent, or they supposedly represent, really is quite astounding, especially when in light of the fact that Congress has never intended to be a career, at least from the perspective of the people who founded the Republic and drafted the Constitution. Now, there are many wealthy men who were among the founders. There were some, like Alexander Hamilton, who were both wealthy and ambitious in unhealthy ways. And I don't want to give the impression that I venerate the founders of the American Republic, framers of the Constitution, as if they were demigods. They weren't. They were human beings. They had the full allotment of failings. They were not immune to the blandishments of power and the enticement of flattery, but they were people who at least were rooted in sounder principles than we have today, and they understood that there was something genuinely corrosive about prolonged exposure to power, and that it was a swift solvent of all the inhibitions that people need to rely on in terms of working their will upon others. So they didn't want Congress to become a career. The assumption was that the House of Representatives particularly was going to be the more accountable branch of the national legislature because members would be up for re-election every 2 years. And you take a look at the fact that your typical congressman spends most of his time raising money in order to stay in office. Now, why would you want to do this? If it's such an onerous burden to be a congressman, and if raising money is such an exhausting and degrading thing, no doubt it is, why do they do it?
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Sonny William is simply pointing out that at one time when our nation was founded, the people really who created this country realized the danger of power, and they didn't want people to be in positions of power for long periods of time because they knew that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely everyone. And so basically, of course, the whole idea was that congressmen were to be reelected every 2 years, and hopefully they'd be there for a few years, be voted out, and somebody else would come in. Well, of course, that's no longer the case.
Yep.
Right now, of course, you get into Congress, and you can stay there for 50 years. Hawaiian senator was there. I don't know. He was there probably 40, 50 years, something like that. Senator Byrd. I mean, they get into office and they just stay there. But, of course, they have very, very powerful and very wealthy friends who keep them there. And they're the finest senators that money could buy. And if you don't think for 1 minute that these people are bribed constantly, well, they may not get the money themselves. It simply goes into the Senate reelection fund. But, of course, basically, that's how they get reelected. They get fabulous amounts of money. There should be a law that says if you get money from a company, a company, you can't vote for anything that would favor them. But that's not the way the system works. The system has been totally corrupted. And we have congressmen and senators who are, as we said, the finest legislators money could buy. The latest poll I saw saw that about 5% of the American people have confidence in our elected representatives. And a lot of them are saying, gee, why don't they trust us? Why don't they have confidence in it? Well, it should be pretty obvious. Go right ahead, William.
Exactly. 9% of the public approves of Congress. And as somebody pointed out, crunching the data, apparently there's a greater public approval rating, a higher public approval rating for such things as cockroaches than there is for Congress. And yet Congress has a, 95-97% reelection rate? There seems to be this general indulgence on the part of people for their own congressmen, but a general antipathy toward Congress as a whole. I was just reviewing here the net worth of members of Congress defined here as both the House of Representatives and the Senate. And it's interesting to see that somebody like Michael McCaul, a congressman from Texas, who's an attorney, he was an attorney before he became a congressman, his net worth is $380 million. At the top of the list is Daryl Issa. From California. His estimated net worth is almost $500 million.
But he actually had that money before he went
yes.
to Congress. I mean, he did not make that money in Congress. I really think that I know Daryl, and I think he's an honest man. I think he's trying to do something, and of course he's thwarted at every turn. But go ahead.
Yeah, but that's why I started with Michael McCaul rather than Daryl Issa, because Michael McCaul was somebody who spent most of his time as a prosecutor before going into politics, which is pretty much the same racket. But below that, you get people like John Kerry, whose net worth is over $200 million. And you take a look at people like Nancy Pelosi, whose net worth is over $100 million. These people have enriched themselves, acting not on behalf of the public interest, but on behalf of the entrenched interests that provide them with such lucrative rewards. And these are people who will, in the case of people like John Kerry and Herb Kohl, who's also on that list, and Nancy Pelosi, these are people who will excoriate the so-called 1% and in the name of fighting the entrenched power of the wealthy, will enact redistributionist tax measures and policies that actually hurt the middle class, the working class, the working poor. It's what just happened with the most recent budget compromise in order to stave off our descent over the fiscal cliff. Of course, we leaped over the fiscal cliff in August of 1971, and we've been falling a very, very long way since then, and pretty soon we're going to collide with the bottom. But these are people who are serving the interests of that entrenched power elite, that Brotherhood of Darkness, you refer to Dr. Stan. And for the most part, there are a couple of worthy exceptions, but for the most part, these people think of themselves as entitled to run the lives of everybody else. And if you're going to be running everybody else's life, you're going to end up in conflicts where people do not want to be regimented, they do not want to be meddled with, and at some point, every government will eventually come down to cases where it's necessary to use aggressive violence in order to make people submit, which means, as happened at Lexington and Concord and many other places since then, in many other countries, eventually the government is going to demand the seizure of the means of defending, of self-defense on the part of the people they intend to rule. We've reached that point now, and it's going to get uglier from here.
I fear that you're absolutely right. Ladies and gentlemen, we're in real trouble today because the good people of America are probably much more concerned about the upcoming football game this weekend than about all the people that we are killing over in Syria. Your tax money, your government, your military is training the murderers there who are killed, probably 70,000 civilians in Syria over this last year. And all that the thousands of those people killed have been children. Where is the outcry from the media about all the children who died over there, innocent children dying in Syria, killed by the terrorists that we're funding?
While the storm clouds gather far across the sea, let us swear allegiance to a land. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair as we raise our voices in a song.
Well, William, you go right ahead.
When we talk about terrorism, we have to talk about state terrorism. What's going on in Syria is state terrorism by proxy. The regime in Syria, the Assad regime, is horrible. I don't want to give the impression that I believe that Assad, who is a hereditary dictator, is anything other than deplorable. It is the perverse talent of Washington, D.C., however, to find worse alternatives to the dictators that they have supported. They always manage to find somebody worse. And that's what's happening now with the so-called Free Syrian Army, which is essentially the gathered scum of the Islamic radical world, given organization and training by a number of intelligence agencies, not excluding the CIA. The CIA has got to be up to its neck in this. They are, of course, involved constantly in fomenting insurrections and sedition and warfare abroad as a way of providing pretext for military action in advance of the interests of this covert brotherhood you refer to. So in Syria, you've got a really good illustration of the sort of thing that the government that poses as our protector is constantly inflicting on countries overseas. Nobody who's got even a modest amount of common sense is going to believe that a government of that sort can be trusted to protect us, that we should allow ourselves to be left disarmed and helpless in the face of a government that would be fomenting that kind of violence that would kill 70,000 people in a distant country in order to install a group of people that have to be considered an unfiltered criminal band. They did the same kind of thing in Kosovo back in 1999. That was an interesting case. I think that was really the first test case of the model that's being used since then in a number of countries, where the CIA found a group of drug-peddling pimps and gangsters who professed to be Muslims but were not particularly religious. Their religion was Marxism. They called themselves the Kosovo Liberation Army. They set them off against Serbs living in Kosovo and against the Serbian government proper, and then created the humanitarian excuse to bomb the living daylights out of a friendly capital city of Belgrade in 1999, and then they installed this group as the government of Kosovo. They did the same thing in Libya. They're doing the same thing in Syria. That's the model they're using right now. This is the way these people act. This is the way these people behave when they're
elected. Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with William. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly William is simply pointing out that we use the same technique over and over again. We overthrow the government. Oh, we've got to improve the situation in Egypt. Mubarak, who we've been backing for years, is really a dictator. And of course, he was a dictator. Mm-hmm. He was a benevolent dictator. As long as you didn't cross him, like any dictator, why, of course, when you cross him, they'll send the assassins out to get you, just like they certainly here in America. A number of the people I've interviewed through the years have been murdered. And it's like Gary Webb, who talked about the CIA and their involvement in the drug episode. And, of course, he ended up shooting himself in the head twice to be certain he was dead. All the 50, there were 20 people at Waco, 20 of the defenders of Waco. When they went in after the Waco compound had burned, they found they'd all shot themselves in the back of the head. That all shot themselves in the back of the head. Isn't that interesting? I wonder how you commit suicide. 20 people commit suicide by shooting themselves in the back of the head. But that's what we're supposed to believe. Ladies and gentlemen, certainly what we do, what William and I both do, is dangerous. But this sort of thing happens in America. Certainly it happened over in Egypt. Mubarak, I'm sure, was a dictator over the people who were running Tunisia and Libya. And we've overthrown all of them in what we call the Arab Spring, a spontaneous uprising and desire for freedom. And then we suddenly get Morsi in the dictator, the new dictator in Egypt. Where was Mr. Morsi trained? He was trained at the University of Southern California. Down in Southern California. And, of course, now he is declaring a dictator. But we never talk about where Morsi went for his university training, or maybe he has strong contacts with the CIA. Now we're in the process of overthrowing the government there in Syria. Probably a million Syrians are fugitives. They've been forced out of their homes. Probably all of everything they've worked for, or everything they've accumulated, or has been destroyed or stolen since they're no longer there. They're fugitives living in refugee camps. Probably close to 70,000 Syrian civilians, innocent civilians, have been killed there, many thousands of them children. But what people don't mention, of course, is, who is financing this revolution, ladies and gentlemen? We are. But they're never going to tell you that because they don't want the common people to understand that this is a much bigger issue. It's all about certainly getting rid of the current dictators and bringing in people who are dependable, who go along with our globalist policies who bring about the one world government. And, of course, in the meantime, I think, of course, we're going to unite the Arab countries, certainly under the control of the Muslim Brotherhood. And I really feel, of course, we're lining up for a great new war. All these countries, all these new Muslim countries that are being created will be moving against Israel exactly as we're told in Ezekiel 38 and 39. Get out your Bible or read the list of the states that are coming against Israel soon, and you'll see they're all there now. Many of them have simply been reconstituted in this last 100 years. I wonder why. Go right ahead, William.
It's interesting when you take a look at a tour of the horizon of the world, and you see throughout the Middle East, the Near East, Africa, and into Latin America, even as close as Mexico, you can see this crimson-red trail of blood, this thread on which all these tragedies would be strung, leads right back to Washington, D.C. You have mass bloodshed occurring right now, being directly encouraged and abetted, funded by the same government that assures us that we can repose under the umbrella of their benevolence, that we can take comfort in their benign supervision if we surrender our firearms, because every government supposedly has the right, it should have a monopoly on the legitimate use of violence. That's something that Gerald Nadler, who's this execrable little excuse for a congressman from New York, said last December when he was confronted after a press conference at which he said that he would support a national ban on high-capacity ammunition magazines. He was approached by a reporter from CNS News, a conservative news outlet, who asked him a very perspicuous question. He said, "You're looking to ban the dissemination of these high-capacity ammunition magazines. Are you going to exempt the military and law enforcement from that ban?" Of course, this is not a hypothetical question. Witness what just happened this last week in New York, where in their untutored haste to get this measure enacted, they forgot to put in an exemption. And it, the reporter asked, I would assume that you're going to exempt the military and law enforcement from this ban, but why would you do this if these ammunition magazines are a source of such horror and tragedy? Then why should the military and the police have access to them if we're going to ban them from the possession of law-abiding civilians, law-abiding citizens? I prefer to use citizens in this context. What Congressman Nadler said was, one of the defining attributes of a nation state is that it has a monopoly on the use of legitimate violence, and it should have this monopoly on the use of legitimate violence. And if you're, the premise of your question is that Americans are going to hold back tyranny by firing machine guns at American troops, then you're insane. That wasn't the premise of the question. The premise of the question was the Jeffersonian proposition that all men, all human beings, are equal before the law, and that it simply won't do to assume that people who are employed by government in the business of armed coercion are made out of better stuff than the citizens whom they supposedly represent, whose rights they supposedly defend. But there is this assumption that somehow when one becomes an agent of the state, a representative of the state, an administrator, a congressman, law enforcement officer, soldier, somehow that person is transmuted from the base material of common humanity into something more exalted and more refined. And furthermore, there's this assumption that those of us who espouse the Jeffersonian ideals here of liberty protected by law rather than people being regimented by government force, and the idea of equality of everybody, both the citizenry and the government, the equality of all people before the law, that we should be looked upon as enemies of the state. And in a sense, I guess we are. I am an enemy of the state. I consider the state to be a Babylonian artifact that is utterly godless and completely detestable unless it is somehow redeemed by making it subordinate to law that is rooted in God's law. If you have the state emancipated from that moral framework, then it is an engine of misery and bloodshed, and it's the most dangerous thing of which we have record. There's nothing to compare in nature with the murderous capacity of an unrestrained government. It is the single biggest source of avoidable violent human death in human history.
But of course, William, that is why our founding fathers limited the power of government so that the federal government had very little power. I mean, it certainly didn't even have a standing army. It had a standing navy, but did not have a standing army. And the power of the government was to be limited by the change of the Constitution because our founding fathers believed you could not trust government. Certainly, matters dealing with life, liberty, and property in the individual were to be handled at the state level, and yes, you could have corruption at the state, but at least you could get up and move if you had to, or you could fight it at the state level. But what they feared was an all-powerful central government. But that is never taught in our schools today. It's not taught in our colleges. I mean, I went through college. I minored in history. No one at any time ever mentioned what our founding fathers felt, and that is that the government governs best. It governs the least. Go right ahead, William.
And of course, that is not taught now any more extensively than it was when you were in college. As a matter of fact, it's become immeasurably worse. It's become immeasurably worse just in the last 10 or 15 years. The first term of the political worldview that's taught in political science classes and most history classes is some variation on the theme that Congressman Nadler was pronouncing, which is that government of necessity has to have a monopoly on the legitimate use of force. That, as you pointed out, Dr. Stan, is not the American concept. The American concept is that whatever legitimacy government might have, that's a very debatable proposition for Jefferson, who acknowledged that when a government, as governments always do, would become injurious of the right that's supposed to protect, then it's the duty of people to alter or abolish that government. Government has a contingent existence. Its powers are derivative. Its powers are limited and irrevocable. They have to be defined by law, and if government transcends or exceeds its allotted powers, then it has to be done away with, and a new government has to be created and instituted on the basis of sound principles. That's what the American patriots did. Jefferson acknowledged that every government, including the one he helped to create, is liable to that type of reconstitution if necessary. But when you speak this language today in this unitary, post-Christian, post-constitutional political system we're living in, the people who are employed by that government, and becoming the largest employer in our country, given the socialist nature of the economy we're living in, people who are employed by the government are now being catechized to look upon those who espouse the founding principles of this country as domestic enemies. as terrorists. There is a report today, actually this report is about a report that was published last December by the School of Counterterrorism at West Point, talking about the radical right as a terrorist threat akin to Al-Qaeda. Now, of course, Al-Qaeda is not really a terrorist threat. Al-Qaeda is a brand name, not an organization. It certainly isn't a globe-bestriding menace of the sort that we've been taught about. But the interesting thing about this report, first of all, is that it was put up by West Point. This is the sort of stuff in which the powers that be are marinating the officer corps. And the thing is, there's nothing about this document, and I've read about half of it, it's about 150 pages long. This document at no point says that the radical right is an international threat of the sort that the military is supposed to deal with. It's a so-called domestic threat. It's just taken for granted in the course of this document that the Pentagon has the proper authority to deal with a purely domestic threat, if indeed the so-called radical right is a domestic threat. And this is an entire inversion of the constitutional order. You mentioned, Dr. Stan, that we were not supposed to have a standing military, a standing army. The Navy was supposed to be maintained for the purpose of defending the Confederation against foreign aggression and ensuring that we would have free passage on the seas in order to conduct trade. The whole idea is that we would be conducting trade with the world, commerce, trade, diplomacy, rather than exporting power. But the Army was on a two-year appropriation basis. The Army was something that was seen, once again, as having a contingent existence. The Founding Fathers did not want to have the Army become a domestic constabulary. They took great pains in order to prevent this. And after the occupation of the South, following the war between the states, there was a measure passed called Posse Comitatus that was supposed to prevent, through statute, reinforce the language found in the Constitution, particularly the Third Amendment to the Constitution, that would prevent the Army from becoming the domestic internal security force. Well, here we have a document produced by West Point that is helping to provide guidance for the new officer corps, describing the so-called radical right as the domestic terrorist threat. Now, what do they mean by the radical right? There are three strains of thought, according to this document, which is very derivative and embarrassingly puerile in terms of the way it approaches the subject. It's basically a book report on everything that was put out by the Southern Poverty Law Center, the Anti-Defamation League, and groups of that kidney over the last 20 or 25 years. It would have to acquire a great deal more depth in order to be considered superficial. But this report lumps the so-called radical right into three categories. The first, of course, would be the white supremacist groups, almost all of which are funded by the federal government. If they have any significant existence or prominence, these are people who have been thoroughly infiltrated and financed by three-letter organizations, not just the FBI, but the ATF and probably the CIA.
And don't forget the NSA.
The NSA, forgive me, that's a very important contributor right to this whole mess.
NSA means no such agency, you're not supposed to know it exists, but it does. It's certainly probably the most powerful organization, far more influential than even the CIA, but most people have no idea. Go ahead.
The second strain would be what they call the fundamentalist radical right, and they don't really define it carefully, and the way that they describe it, it sort of blends into the so-called white supremacist right as well. But the third group is the one that I find most troublesome, the anti-federalist movement. What is the anti-federalist movement? Well, as defined in this document, the anti-federalist movement is multifaceted and includes the beliefs that the American political system and its proxies were hijacked by external forces interested in promoting a new world order in which the United States will be absorbed into the United Nations or another version of global government.
And that's exactly what has happened.
Well, in fact,
that's exactly what certainly David Rockefeller really admits in his book, Memoirs.
So
basically, I mean, maybe he's part of the leader of the radical right because he says on page 405, you know, they think, referring to people like you and I, that we are part of a secret cabal conspiring against the best interests, working against the best interests of the United States, conspiring with others around the world to bring about a more integrated global and economic structure. And if that's the charge, I am guilty, and I am proud of it. I am an internationalist. Those are David Rockefeller's words. So basically, of course, then is that what they're talking about?
Yeah, we become their enemy because we tell them the truth, to paraphrase right the passage of the book of Galatians.
Before we go on, William, I want you to get your website out. Tell people how to get in touch with you and how they can get to your certainly your PayPal site.
I appreciate that, Dr. Stan. My chief outlet is the Pro Libertate blog, which is found at freedominourtime.blogspot.com. freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Go to Google or another search engine and type in Pro Libertate, P-R-O-L-I-B-E-R-T-A-T-E, and my last name, Grigg, and that should be the first return. Or just type in William Grigg or William N. as in Norman Grigg, and Pro Libertate should be one of the first returns, if not at the very top of the list. To mention, Dr. Stan, there is a PayPal button at the end of every essay, and those who have access to PayPal and are interested in contributing can use that in order to donate to me, in order to keep the site up and running and to keep my family up and running, as it were. This is pretty much what we depend on in order to support our home and to keep ourselves afloat.
And we certainly support William. We think he's one of the finest minds and most articulate spokesmen for our side. And if you're in a position to help him, why, we hope that you'll join us and Barbara and I in our efforts to help William. And certainly William, as you know, writes our monthly newsletter. And certainly you can read the Radio Liberty newsletter by going to our website. But you can go to his website, get his writings, and certainly find his PayPal button. We were simply talking about this West Point document that seems to characterize people who actually believe there's a conspiracy to create a world government. Somehow they're the enemies of America. Basically, they're the people who want to preserve America. We've been taken over by the people whose loyalty is not to America, but to this globalist dream. People like David Rockefeller, who on page 405 of his book Memoirs, which you can get through us, actually made the statement I just quoted. Go right ahead.
Exactly right. They also go on to describe as anti-federalist and thus prospective or incipient terrorists people who espouse strong convictions regarding the federal government, believing it to be corrupt and tyrannical, with a natural tendency to intrude on individual civil and constitutional rights. Finally, they support civil activism, individual freedoms, and self-government. Extremists in the anti-federalist movement direct most of their violence against the federal government and its proxies and law enforcement, claims the West Point counterterrorism training document here. The interesting thing is that apart from the unsourced and unsubstantiated claim about violence, the characterization of the anti-federalist movement is largely true. We do believe that the federal government's become corrupt and tyrannical, which is exactly what the Founding Fathers warned would happen if it became unmoored from the Constitution. And for speaking the language of the Founding Fathers, now we've been identified as prospective terrorists, if not outright terrorists, enemies of the state.
I think that this certainly suggests that there are people, and certainly in our military, who want to use that military against the patriots to actually promote world government. Well, William, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
Well, Dr. Stan, just to piggyback on that last thought about people in the military wanting to promote world government, much of what is said here about the so-called anti-federalist right, believing that the federal government is surrendering our sovereignty to the United Nations, consists of people like you and me actually reading documents that the Pentagon was putting out 50 years ago calling for exactly that to happen. The Pentagon commissioned a 1962 or 1963 report, I believe it was published in 1963, by Lincoln P. Bloomfield of MIT, entitled The World Effectively Controlled by the United Nations. And it talked about the idea of using the United Nations to create what was called a secure global military environment. And that document, which represented the thinking of the Pentagon and the State Department and other agencies, the federal government involved in these issues, made it very clear that they envisioned a regime in which the United States would be subsumed into a UN-directed New World Order. You can take a look at the 1961 document, Freedom from War, which talks about the general and complete disarmament of all nations and the creation of a UN peace force that would absorb the United States military. And you'd have an internal security force where local law enforcement, of course, county sheriffs being the most important element of that, would be absorbed into this monolithic structure. That's what's been going on as well since 1961. It's not as if we make these things up. We actually read the documents. We have a functional grasp of basic English. We're able to absorb those concepts and understand them, articulate them, and oppose them. And for doing this, of course, we're now looked upon as subversive. There was another story just today out of Portsmouth, Ohio, where there was an emergency drill conducted by the National Guard and the Homeland Security Department in which the terrorist threat was identified as, quote, school employees disgruntled over the government's interpretation of the Second Amendment and who use weapons of mass destruction to attack a school. They're basically target scouting the so-called Patriot Movement now as an internal enemy to be dealt with by the military. We have to include that in our discussion of what's going on with the gun grab. These are desperate, dangerous times, and once again, it's going to get worse from here.
And, of course, it is our job to clarify what the issues are so people can see in stark contrast those people who believe in freedom and those who people believe in an all-powerful government, which will be backed by the military. I think we have an awful lot of patriotic people in our military. We're not going to be taken in by this. I certainly hope and pray that's the case. I know a lot of our military officers are dedicated to what you and I are. It's the younger ones we have to be concerned about, who are being certainly misinformed by wicked people at the highest levels of our military. William, we're out of time. God bless you. We'll look forward to talking to you real soon.
God bless you, Dr. Stan.
Thanks. Good night. Okay, that was it. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We do hope you, of course, enjoy our conversations with William every Friday. He is certainly a very clear thinker. We hope you enjoy his programs. And basically, if you want to read his newsletter, they're posted up on our website at RadioLiberty.com. And you can, of course, subscribe to our newsletter and get his writings on a weekly, on a monthly basis. Well, this is the time I need to remind our listeners out across America that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported, and quite frankly, we need your help to maintain what we're doing on a regular basis. If you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. You join the family, you get our four best tapes of the month, and you get our monthly newsletter. Some people just subscribe to the newsletter. I think we have about 700 people who subscribe to the newsletter. And then, of course, we have certainly our programs that are heard on four different networks every week. But we have to buy the radio time. It's a very expensive proposition. And we depend upon those of you out there who can help us, certainly by donating, by buying the products we offer, or simply joining the Radio Liberty family. But if you're not in a position to join the Radio Liberty family, we do ask that you pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Then, of course, we hope that you'll read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. And, of course, if you're in a position to buy a case of the books, you can get them for as little as less than $2.40 each. You can give them away. You can sell them. You can lend them out. But this will be a means by which you can reach others to get them to understand the true spiritual nature of the battle which we're engaged in. Because this is not certainly a political conflict is not an ideological conflict. It is a spiritual conflict that's being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. And if you get a copy of the case of the books, why, you will have a weapon that you can utilize in helping others to understand. And you may well be able to change their lives forever. We send out a lot of our books to people, such as without charge, who we want to influence. And I will tell you that many of the people have written back and said, how this has changed their whole outlook of the world. So much of what's going on just doesn't make sense. But once you read Brotherhood of Darkness, it'll connect the dots for you. Well, the number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. We hope you'll go there. I hope you, of course, if you're in a position to patronize our advertisers, we'll appreciate that. If you had some product that you'd like to advertise with us, why, we'd be glad to consider carrying your ad, although we don't take all ads. We have to be certain that it will be something that will be beneficial for our listeners, because I'm responsible for the ads and for everything that goes out on our programs. And so we'd love to hear from you, though. And then, of course, we hope that maybe you'll want to get my talk on Agenda 21, the covert plan, explaining to you the genocidal policies which are being invoked today. China has killed 400 million children, in other words, unborn children. Who financed that? For International Planned Parenthood? Who finances International Planned Parenthood? You do. A similar situation has happened in India, where they have aborted 400 million children. And, of course, who pays for that? Largely International Planned Parenthood. Who funds International Planned Parenthood? You do, ladies and gentlemen, through your generous tax payments. Understand this is going on all throughout the world. We're killing literally thousands of innocent children every day. But, Chris, there is a genocidal program. They intend to kill off most of the people in the world through new diseases, certainly through famine and through war. And we're moving into a position where we're going to have more and more wars. It's only a matter of not if, but when these wars are coming. And I fear there's going to be a minor war sometime in this coming year with Iran. And then when we go to war with the Muslim world, I really don't know. Notice one thing, though. America is not mentioned. America is not mentioned in the scriptures, unless, of course, America is Babylon. And what is this Babylon they talk about? Why is the financial center of the world? And the merchants of the world will weep, because no longer will there be any means of buying and selling, because Babylon has been destroyed. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Pray for revival in America, but please pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and our protection.
Gentlemen, to the Power Hour Radio Show. It is that time again. You're back with us, and we are in session. It is 18 January, Friday, 2013. You're in the right place. That is, if you question and don't accept without evidence. That's what we're all about here. And I do thank each and every one of you for questioning, for asking, and for thinking outside the cage. Used to be the box. It is now the cage, because it's all about the truth. Joining me in the studio today is Josh. Thank you, Josh, for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome, welcome. Yes, glad to have you here. Lance Armstrong.
So what? No, duh.
No duh from you? Yeah. Not even a duh?
No.
Well, he was no on does. Oprah last night. He was really? On Oprah. And I have to say, I was underwhelmed.
Were you?
I was underwhelmed.
You know, I have some friends who do some long riding, and one